Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to Strictly Hoops with CJ Miles. Rate, review, subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. That is the Raptors Over Everything podcast feed. And on YouTube, subscribe there and like all the videos because it's appreciated. So
very much so. CJ,
yeah. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. It's great, man. You know, life's good. Everybody's healthy. Like we were chopping up before, you know, it's always good.
Yeah, lots of smiles, and especially for the Toronto Raptors, because that game last night, we were recording the day after the Sacramento Kings game, and we don't know how this road trip is going to continue, but that was the best win of the season, and it's for a variety of reasons, but just to start off, like, your thoughts on that game?
It's kind of what, you know, what you would like to see going on the road when you've been struggling a bit. You know, you got a brutal road trip coming, a lot of days, some good teams going into another team's building that's been playing well this year. A lot of weapons, a lot of guys that are playing well on that team. It's not just being carried. And just to feel the energy, you could tell they were motivated. Scrappy on defense, moving, ball moving, guys making shots. Everybody that's, you know, everybody's roles that they have, they executed in their roles throughout the night, I feel like everybody did their jobs. And I think that's all you can really ask for, especially on the road. Because this is a team that struggled on the road also.
Oh, yeah. They've been struggling everywhere, but specifically on the road. And that is a mark of a good team, is how well you perform on the road in the Lions' Den when you're in enemy territory. And can you, you know, capitalize on your chances? Can you play disciplined basketball? Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about, you know, road trip stories, about some of these long trips that take place and what players do. But how important is getting that first win on a road trip like this? They're not back until February 6th.
It's great in this position, especially when you got a team that's been struggling, because you don't want that energy going with you for the rest of the trip, you know, trying to figure out, man, like, what are we not doing, or can we fix it, or is somebody gonna happen, or is a trade gonna happen, or is a whatever. You don't want all the things that are already floating to overpower the main thing, which is us winning basketball games and being the best team we can be. And I think they always, you know, the saying, winning cures all. And I think it's great for them.
Great for them, for sure. And one of the best parts about last night, and one of the more important parts of trying to stop the Sacramento Kings, is slowing down Domantas Sabonis. And last time the Raptors saw him, he carved him up. Granted, in that game, they did not have Precious Achiuwa. They did not have OG Anunoby, but also on the other side, the Kings didn't have Kevin Huerter, who, as you have talked about, is shooting the ball unbelievably, like 41% from three.
It might not be anybody shooting the ball like he's shooting the ball almost.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. But last night, the Raptors, I mean, you were on those Raptor teams where a player would come in and Nick Nurse gets into his toolbox and he's in his mad scientist mode. He's like, let's find a way to neutralize them. And last night, man, 9 turnovers, a career high 9 turnovers for him. The Raptors were all over him, but there were very specific things that they were doing. And obviously post-game, Nick Nurse was like, I'm not going to tell you guys, even though, like, earlier on in the season, he said that I'm not going to tell what we did with DeAndre Ayton when they slowed him down because we have another game against him. Mm-hmm. There's not another game against the Kings. So why couldn't he tell us what they were doing? But I mean, you probably know.
That's Nick being Nick, I guess, in that position. Like, he's, you know, he's having fun. But with Sabonis is that, first of all, you got to match his physicality, right? It's a physical guy on his drives, likes to hit people, likes to do things. So, there's big bodies. First possession of the game is, like, the perfect way you guard him, right? Ends up in an ISO at the end of the clock against Pascal. Mm-hmm. Drives left, tries to hit Pascal with a shoulder. Pascal takes the bump and doesn't let him get by right away. He goes into his post move. OG comes collapsing down.
Yeah.
All of his drive, he's a playmaking big, gets lots of drives, gets lots of stuff from like the high and mid post, always saw bodies. I felt like there were no clear ways for him to either where he felt like he was in an ISO by himself or clear plays to just dump off and make straight line passes. They did a good job of being active. You could hear, if I watched the game over on the Kings broadcast, and that's all they talked about was the fact that Toronto is so good at getting deflections.
Yeah.
And they kept having to bring it up because those guys were so active in that game. But that matching his physicality, not giving him just these clear plays because he's such a good decision maker, and just scrapping. The guards came down, swatted at the ball when he bring it down some. Just seeing bodies is the biggest thing you do. You treat him like you treat any playmaker at any position. You make him see length, and which these guys have a lot of, and make him and just try to shrink the floor.
Sure. And having Precious and OG to take that initial hit. And that's what I was so impressive about Precious last season in the playoffs against Joel Embiid. And I mean, Joel Embiid, obviously there's a size mismatch, but if you're able to take that initial hit from a big like him, you're in a pretty good spot. And OG, obviously strong as an ox, Precious Achiuwa, extremely athletic, extremely strong. They're able to take that and you're already in a good spot with your defense, at least with your one-on-one coverage. And after that, I mean, it was the late help, which I really loved that the Raptors were doing. And that's been a staple of what they do. But the activity, as you mentioned, active hands, active feet, engagement, cohesion, these are things that we just have not seen consistently from the Toronto Raptors. And it's a long road trip, but this game, doing this on the first game of this road trip is a terrific sign, because you've talked about it, I've talked about it, I mean, I've tweeted about it. This season is not gone, right?
Not
There's still time for them to make a move
not even
here,
close.
But it has to start in this road trip. And specifically, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit of the trade deadline coming up, but we're not going to get into like the weeds necessarily about the Toronto Raptors. And it's kind of on purpose, because I still believe that Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster and Nick Nurse believe in this group, and they're going to give them every last chance they can to show them that if you guys really believe in yourselves in this group and you care about playing with each other, this is your last chance. So we're not going to talk about it out of spite.
That's the tough part too, because you're in a position where, you know, we want to be a winning franchise and we want to do what's right for the future also. But if this isn't going to work out, or if we're not going to be able to save this and make it, if we're not going to be able to get guys to mesh, then they have to do their jobs too, right?
Yeah.
They have to either look at this like, how do we prepare for the future and what pieces do we move forward with? Or if there's a piece that we think changes everything and it still allows us to do both sides of that, we have to make that move. And
100%.
As we know, those guys aren't afraid to.
No, they're going to do what's best for everyone. Like, that's no different than the front office, a player. You always got to do what's best for yourself or your franchise.
And we got to remember.
Go ahead.
We got to remember also that trading a guy just because we love him as a fan base doesn't mean they're not helping that guy too. You know what I mean? Like, the situation that that guy could end up in could be better for him. I think we always think from the home standpoint, trading a guy that has been, you know, has provided service to a team is such a bad thing, but it might be a better fit for something else that's a greater need that comes in.
Yeah.
And we might have a player that can fill the role that we're putting out too. I shouldn't say putting out, that sounds bad. That we're sending away to another team, because now his opportunity grows and we get a better fit for the team. And then we get a young guy who the home team wants to see play too, get to step up and fill a void.
And you can leave that relationship on good terms still.
Yes.
Right?
Which is why I think the open communication is better than people having to go to the media and say, get me out of here, or doing it that way. I think there should be able to be some type of back and forth with the front office if we get to that stage of things. Yeah. I should know what you're thinking and you should know what I'm thinking. It's business.
I mean, and also, like, we just saw a trade in the NBA, Wizards-Lakers, right? Rui was traded to the Lakers, and part of the reason it was done is because, I mean, Rui has expressed that he wants to leave, but also you got Denny, right, sitting on the bench, and the Wizards wanted to clear space for him to get an opportunity for more playing time. So this is the nature of the business. This is how it goes. But, like, going back to the original point is that I still think the Raptors front office, they want to see the starting lineup, those guys, Fred, Gary, I think they want to see them all back, right? Because they believe in them. And last season wasn't, I don't think it was a fluke. I mean, whatever's gone on this year, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there was someone on Twitter, I don't know who exactly he was, but he was a member of King's Twitter. And he's like, this team that the Kings are playing is like the best team they've played in. Like, what is going on with the Raptors? And I quote to you saying it's complicated. And I don't even know, right? I'm not in the front office. I don't know what exactly is going on, but I know what I'm seeing in front of me. And I know that the Raptors has played their best game of the season at a time that is very fragile for the front office, the Raptors, a few of the players. I think that means something.
Yeah. And maybe, this time of backs against the wall with everything the way it is with trade deadline coming, maybe it's the thing that's needed. And then maybe you'd be able to take that energy and form it into, hold on, we can do this.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't need to be that to get the ball rolling. You know what I mean? Maybe it's been here, and if we can convince guys to look at it that way, then we can carry that energy for the rest of the season. I just think you just have to find a way to kind of let go of the things that's been going on, that's been looming. Once you start to get some winning ways, some winning games, focus on that.
Sure.
And if you're present in what we're doing, if the game, if something's changing the game plan, put a big check mark beside it. This has been one of the things that's led to this. Let's make that a staple. Let's not get away from it. Let's, every time we get together in practice, let's talk about it. Every time we watch film, we make emphasis on those things, whatever it is. Not to say they haven't been doing that. But right now, while you have so much proof in the pudding of this being the thing that's making us win, drill it. Drill on it. Punch it. I don't care if guys get tired of hearing you say the same thing every day. Say it every time you can. Because it's almost like, you know, it's just like you do anything.
Yeah. Yesterday at practice, Thad said that we want to get back to putting the fear in people's hearts.
Yeah.
And he also disclosed, and Nick Nurse later didn't necessarily like that, that they had a film session where Nick showed them clips from their defense last season. And Nick was saying that, I mean, that was a closed door meeting, so I'm not sure why that was said, but it was to get their spirits up and to show them like, this is what you were. And it's the same damn players. This is what you were. So anyways, it's a great start. They got the Warriors, and we're going to talk about Steph Curry in a second here. I'm just excited to see them playing like that, because
and it's fun for them. It's good to hear guys yelling and screaming and encouraging, and that energy is unmatched. Like we said, to go on the road, and like I was telling you, to be able to hear the bench through the broadcast, to hear them yelling out and screaming and encouraging and saying backside, whatever they're saying, screaming for each other. That is a energy that needs to, that they need that more now than ever, especially on the road when you're coming off struggling, because you're going into these other buildings that's going to have at least 15,000 people in it screaming for the other side.
Exactly.
So you got 13, 14. That's all you got. That's minus the coach, plus the coaches, I should say, but I'm just speaking on the player.
Hey, Jamal McGlure is there, man. That's like facts. 10 fans.
No, that's true. Especially when he gets the cup or the paper rolled up. He's, I don't know what he thinks really happening with that. Shout out to Big Cat, man. That's my guy. Yeah. I love Big Cat.
I love hearing Pascal Siakam yell, "Yes, sir."
Yeah.
Right. When you can hear it in the away gym, things are going really well. He was terrific yesterday. Man, I mean, there was someone there was someone who asked Fred, he's like, you know, Pascal didn't have his best game. And then Fred looked at him. He's like, I don't know, 26, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. That's not too bad. And so I'm happy that he actually informed him that's not a bad game, even though Pascal didn't shoot, above 50%, which he normally does. But that game is becoming like a staple for Pascal, 26, 7, and 11. And he had some crazy blocks last night. I love that yesterday he was working outside in. Almost right, and typically it's the other way, and that's what you encourage, you know, star players to do. But for him, because of how walled off the paint is, it's like he's slowly accepting that if I get the outside game going, the inside is going to become that much easier.
I think his greatest weapon is his mid-range now. I think that's where it's, I guess that counts as outside too. He's not shooting a bunch of threes. So, but I think that's just what pops into my head. Like, you watch that third quarter, he creates so much space in that 15 to 7 foot, 17 foot area. And even the little fadeaway he's developed when he's backing smaller guys in, right almost to the dots in the paint. And he's just kind of his little fade in the middle of the paint where he ISOs that, which is crazy that he ISOs in the middle of the floor and he finds space to do what he's doing. It's not like we're getting people out of the way or anything. He's right smack dead in the middle of the floor, which is which is, I don't understand how defenses, I'm not going to speak it into existence, but anyway, but his mid range has become so special. He shoots it so well. His release has become so much higher. He can fade. He can spin. His feet are so good. I think that is just allowing him to find angles to get to the basket. Mm-hmm. Because when he creates the space, his handles become so much better. He can change directions and get to where he wants to be. He picks his spots so well now.
I feel like I've gotten to a point when he's shooting them, I can tell when they're going to go in just from like the broadcast angle. And it's right when like his arms are very long. So when it's extended and he's got that like arc and it starts, his follow through starts around his nose or eyes. Mm-hmm. And then he just gets that nice rotation, that nice arc. And it's just money. And it's not touching anything.
He's not in the shot pocket. And you can tell he's drilled it. The ball doesn't get, you know, behind his head where it becomes like a slingshot. It gets flat. It doesn't, it's not prematurely released where he's shooting it straight up into the sky. He's just found a nice space that allows him to have the strength to be able to shoot it whichever way he wants.
He started the game with two back-to-back catch-and-shoot threes from the baseline and then also the wing. And I believe both of those were coming off of Scotty Barnes' passes. Your thoughts on Scotty as a point guard and how he's being used to facilitate and just make dimes. Dimes are everywhere.
I think the first thing is, you know, obviously he's a 6'9 point guard. You talked about the size, the length, the being able to see the vision. But I think the biggest thing, even though we play positionless basketball now, the guys that are guarding him aren't used to guarding primary ball handlers. So we put them in positions. We just kind of changed the way the defense is used to being set, right? Even the point guards, they know the defensive schemes. They know when they're supposed to be in help, but they're still in spaces they're not used to being in all the time. They're used to guarding the ball and used to – it's like we talked about on the show one time, like you switch positions. When I was playing, moving from the two to the four, now my back's to the baseline more. Or like the position I'm starting in, if I'm guarding a four that's doing pick and rolls, he's running down to the baseline and running up, and you gotta there's still a muscle memory you have to gain in that action too. You have to get lots of reps to understand, you know, that it can switch thing. And then you switch, and now I'm guarding the two again, and now I'm back to being the guy on the elbow and trying to figure out, you know, what play is being called or if they're gonna use this guy in the play this time. We don't even know because it's such positionless. Like now we're just going to pick on who we think we can pick on. So I think guys have to be so alert, and I think he's able to take advantage of that.
Right. When it comes to being a 6'9 point guard in the pick and roll as a ball handler, what does that do for the defense in terms of the passing angles, in terms of being able to execute and just, you know, find cutters? Like, how does that negate some of the advantages that a defense might have in a typical pick and roll setting?
So if I run a pick and roll with, if Scotty's the five and Pascal's the four, and I run the pick and roll with those two, I have the two biggest guys on the floor outside the three-point line guarding this play.
Yeah.
So any advantage I gain downhill, everybody's small. Anybody that's coming to help is smaller. The guy that's protecting the rim is smaller. The guys with their hands up in the passing lanes are smaller. Meaning my advantage of vision or attacking the help, if I beat these guys out, which I probably will because they're slower feet, that's not everybody, but when I do, everything that's coming to help is a smaller guy. That's what creates the most havoc for it. So, like, if I have Fred in the weak side corner and his guy is the guy that's got to be the baseline help with Scotty going to attack the rim, there's nothing he can do about that but foul. And if he's there early, I'm throwing a bullet pass to Freddie standing by himself in a corner. Same with Gary Trent Jr., same with OG. They're still smaller guys. OG's guy might be a little bigger, but still, it's still not the guy that's been assigned to me.
Actually, speaking of that, it was a Fred and Scotty pick and roll, but Fred rejected the screen, and Scotty started going towards the middle of the floor, and he got the ball. And because of what you're talking about, Pascal on the weak side, he set a back screen for OG. And that player who Pascal set the screen for is just smaller, right? Mm-hmm. And so the screen was very effective, and OG got an open catch and shoot three, and he hit it. So that's a good point. I mean, mm-hmm. that's why we have you on the show, is that you're going to make points like this. We haven't thought of it, but that's absolutely, yeah. absolutely right. And then he found Chris, and it's been a couple of times actually where Scotty is.
Shout out to Chris. Chris had a great game last night too.
He was awesome, right? He's great. And, like the fact that he was like a DMP like last week, right? And nothing changed, nothing wavered for him. He knew exactly who he was and what he had to do. And now he's got his tag team partner, you know.
Yeah,
Triple H there. But the way Scotty is finding Precious and Chris and the spots that they are most effective. The Chris, it is, you know, by the rim, and he's just able to get some easy layups. And with Precious, you just see him like exploding to the rim when the opportunity is there.
That slot drive has been good for him when that ball swinging around the horn and his guy thinks he can help because he's thinking Precious not to be a shooter. Yeah. And Precious is catching that ball running. He had one really early in the game, especially down the lane. And by the time the defense can react because it's coming around the horn, there's nobody in help set. And which it's still going to be a small guy again because he's the biggest guy on the floor. So the biggest guy's guarding him. He attacks and gets by the biggest guy. There's nobody going to meet him at the rim with a one inch start.
Yeah.
And he gets his bang out. And then that's another energy boost for the unit also. And for him, you know, guys tend to, it just works this way psychologically. Guys getting easy shots or open shots or dunks, it changes the way the defense is played too. It's not a coincidence they shot. I don't remember the exact number. I know they shot 50% at least last night.
Yeah.
So we're talking every other shot, right? Like when you really think about it throughout a game. And sometimes it's like five shots in a row. Mm-hmm. And these happen because Precious gets a dunk, and then we get two stops in a row, and we get run out. Somebody gets an open three. Somebody gets but his play is what starts all of that.
Uh-huh.
It starts the bench chattering. It starts the guys getting hyped. It starts everything.
And they're getting so many runouts because they're playing zone with a bunch of 6'8", 6'9", players that are extremely athletic.
So crazy.
And they found the sweet
spot. It's so crazy when you think about it, right? Like, it's just like, it's like a matchup zone. It's like just be in the gaps and make sure nobody gets open shots, right? And we can be everywhere on the floor, like literally. And then Fred makes up for the size difference with his hands, moves his feet, and being smart. Like,
they were great last night, ball. Man. They were scrappy. He was very active yesterday.
They were
very
around. Active. And that's the energy that they have to play with, though. Like, and I think sometimes, you know, when you have a good defensive team, right, and you've been good and you understand it, it gets boring. Good teams get bored sometimes. And sometimes that boredom spirals out of control, right?
Sure.
Like, it's like, because we know what we're supposed to be doing. It's not that anybody here is not experienced enough for us to play at this level. Mm. It's just about us buckling down and saying, this is the energy I'm going to play with on every play.
Right.
If I get tired, then we got people that can come in. I'm going to get my minutes. And I create so much more shot opportunities. So I create more things for me offensively. Now everybody gets 14 shots at least because of that.
Yeah. He has at least 5 assists in his past 5 games. He had 10 yesterday. He only took a few shots, but he had 10 assists and 6 rebounds. And it's like, that's how he prefers to play. He's making the extra pass. He's finding his teammates. And then when he has to score, he's got to be able to execute in those situations. But good stuff from Scotty, playing point guard. Road trips. Have there been cases for you in your career where a road trip has actually helped catapult the team?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
into like future success in that season, because that talked about that yesterday too, is that this is a perfect time for us to be on the road, right? Mm-hmm. Get together. It's going to be us in games, off the court, just hanging out. Like, have you encountered that before?
Yeah, because you look at it like where there's nowhere to run to, right? Mm-hmm. It's make or break time, and we're going to be together. It's going to be us, like you said, just them on the road. I don't want to call it distractions because family and things aren't distractions, but that's just less of a thing you have to split yourself into to do, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we just have more time to focus on it, on what we're doing, and to really drill into what we're doing, film and taking care of the body and being fresh and getting time around each other, just kind of rekindling bonds and things, conversations that turn into basketball conversations and allow us to hash out if there's anything that we feel like we need to hash out. Like if guys haven't been on the same page, you know, being around each other, getting to hang out, talking, getting an understanding of what's been going on, or if you have felt the guy hadn't been playing up to his potential, a conversation you might have at dinner might lead to you to understanding why he hasn't been playing to his potential. Mm. And now there's a way I can help him. There's no way to help him if I don't know what the problem is, because that's the thing we keep talking about. We don't know what the problem is. I don't understand why guys don't want to play like they played last night, because we know they can do it, right? So let's figure out what everybody's feeling. Let's figure out how I can help this happen. Yeah. If it is me that it needs to take three less shots, or if I need to take five more shots, whatever it may be, let's figure out what that thing is. If I'm the one that's not providing the energy in my unit, that's not helping turn the tide.
Right.
Or let's make sure I'm not the one.
But that doesn't happen when you're at home.
I don't. So I'm not saying that it doesn't, but it's easier to happen on a road trip like this. And I'm speaking very on the current pulse of this team also.
Yeah.
Like the position that we're in, there's a heightened focus on, we need to figure this out. And I think it just allows more time to figure it out on a road trip like this. We're at home, we talk about it at practice, we're leaving, going home to my family, I'll see you tomorrow, or I'll see you at shoot around, whatever it is. Like on a road trip like this, yo, you're trying to go get some lunch, trying to go get dinner. Y'all, I got my Xbox in my room. Let's play cards. Let's play dominoes, whatever. There's so much time to allow these things to naturally happen where they don't feel like attacks. Because everybody knows when guys aren't playing up to their potential, they already know that. So coming from the outside, it feels like an attack. You get defensive. It's not on purpose. It's just, yo, I already know I haven't shot the ball well in five games. You don't have to tell me about the shots I'm missing.
Right. The guard's down a little bit.
Yeah, now we get to talk, and that doesn't come up for 20 minutes, and we happen to be watching the game, and it's like, I could have made an extra pass right there.
Hmm.
And that lets the guard down. Now it's like, and then the next guy admits to a fault of his. Because it doesn't start by attacking guys and telling them what they're doing wrong. It starts by admitting to what you're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
The honesty is what gets guys, everybody else, honest, because they don't feel alone.
Yeah. This situation is kind of fragile. It's funny how this is working out, where this road trip, the longest road trip the Raptors have this season, and also for like a few seasons, actually, it's going right into the trade deadline. Like we're talking 3-day difference, February 6th to get back. Trade deadline is February 9th. How does that feel for an athlete when you know, like, I mean, we can say the names, like it's Fred and it's Gary, right? And there's OG as well. There's rumors around that, but we know for sure it's going to be, they got to make decisions on Fred and Gary because they have player options. They're going to opt out. For players like them, for other players too, like just how sensitive is this, right? Because you could be playing like your last like six games with the Raptors.
I would think it's better for it to be out there, that it's a possibility of things like that. Because now I don't have to be this lingering thing in behind closed doors thinking like, man, like, you know, like, but now that it's out there and everybody knows kind of what's going on, and seeing your name pop up in the stuff that pops up on social media doesn't throw you for a loop, because you know it's a possibility. And it's like, all right, I'm just going to control what I can control now, which is what I'm doing on the floor. And everything else that's going to happen is going to happen. Something's going to happen that's out of my control at some point. But now that everybody knows it's a possibility, I know, front office knows, even the fans know, there's nothing for me to act. I don't have to act like, oh, man. Like, you know, I have to have this sadness of like, it's just like, all right, I know that could happen. That's I can't do anything about that right now, though. So let's just go play basketball. And now wherever I go or I stay, I'm in the best mindset for what's going on. I think since we went over, they talked about Fred denying the whatever the contract is, whatever the extension was, whatever they said the mishap was. I think he's played better since then.
Hmm.
I think there's been a more steady back to him, steady itself. It's been a thing that's been like, all right, everybody knows, like, hey, we got, I said my piece about it. Now I don't have to say anything else about it. It's not this thing floating around. Yeah. Even the guys in the locker room, if they didn't know completely, they know now because they saw my quote, they saw the articles, whatever, whatever. Everybody knows where we stand.
Yeah.
Let's just go play basketball. I'm still trying to win. I'm not going to go out there and throw it away to get me shipped out of here because that doesn't help me either.
Right.
If I'm playing terrible, it doesn't help me in any type of way.
Hmm.
Playing great helps everybody. Me, myself, the team, the next team I go to, if I'm out of there, whatever it is.
Yeah. Past five games? Yeah, five games. He's taken at least 13 shots in each game. And there were way too many cases earlier in the season where he was like taking six shots. And like, this is like part of the growing pains, I guess. And that's why maybe we never find out the intricacies of this season and why it's been a little bit more complicated than last season, because you would think after, you know, going off last season, sure, you know, Fred was hampered for the last like little bit there, but largely the same core. So who knows, maybe we find out, but certainly it seems like they have at least like found something, and they have been playing much better over the past, like, you know, 2-3 weeks or so. It hasn't always amounted to wins, but they're playing more consistently. And then if, you know, yeah, go ahead.
But I think you can deal with that, though, because you know they eventually does turn into wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think you can only ask for the effort and of execution, trying to do what we planned on doing. If a guy has an otherworldly night on the other side, some nights there's nothing you can do about that. Or if a team comes in hot, makes a bunch of threes, or we just don't make shots, but they're the right shots, there's some nights like that. But what you don't want to see is not playing the right way, or lack of effort, or straight line drives to the basket, or just turnover after turn. You know what I mean? Things that a team of this stature should not be doing. That's what you don't want to see, because now it's like, it looks like there's no sense of urgency, because those are things that these guys have shown they could do when they sleep.
Sure. Steph Curry. He is the next he is the next game for the Toronto Raptors. And you've played against him. We obviously know his shooting pedigree, how great he is. This is a loaded question, but how do you slow down Steph Curry? I'm saying slow down because you're not ever going to do what they were able to do to Domantas Sabonis. But you can slow him down. So how do you do that?
I think the major things first that pop up. The first thing is fresh bodies. You got to switch. You got to be able to keep fresh bodies on him, because he could arguably be the best conditioned athlete of all time, or NBA player of all time. I won't step outside of our sport because I don't know those guys personally. I haven't seen it firsthand. But this guy that I'm talking about here, just I love the JJ Redick quote that I always come back to. He has the gravity of the sun, right? Like, he talks about how he makes everything shift. So if you can find a way to be disciplined enough with not overreacting to every action he's in, which I'm not saying is easy to do, but I think the best way you do that is keeping fresh bodies on him, because you have guys less fatigued, less mistakes. Most mistakes happen when you start to fatigue some. So the more fresh bodies you can keep on him, the clearer minds, the more guys just playing with energy. And he's the way they play, the guys he's playing with, experience, they're that good. He's going to get his shots, and his range extends to half court. So, like, he's going to take four of those, and there's going to be like, what do you want me to do about those? He makes three of those, it's like you tip your hat kind of thing. But it's hard. You got to mix it up. You double some pick and rolls, some you don't, because he can pass the ball. And it's not even about him passing the ball. He's more dangerous once he passes it. So you double the pick and roll, he throws it out, and before the ball is caught, he's already in another sprint. So now you have two people committed to him who can't react fast enough because they're high hands trying to deflect the pass. If they leave the floor, then it's done. I think that's one of the things I had a coach that always said, when he passes, don't leave the floor.
Yeah.
Because when you leave the floor, when he passes, he takes off. And now we're in a full out frenzy, right? Like, cause everybody sees him changing sides. The big jumps out early to make sure he doesn't catch it. Then that's when they get the slip dunks and layups. Yeah. It's all, his action is just nonstop.
The box and one that they put on him a few years ago obviously just became famous, but it made sense. And especially with this Raptors team that is so versatile, you don't necessarily care who is guarding Steph. You just want someone guarding him. So I would imagine we're probably going to see more zone, maybe box and one, but just like zones in general, because, you know, Steph that way he can do all the movement he wants, but wherever the action is happening, we have someone.
Somebody's
and we're
already
okay.
There.
Yeah. And we're okay with, you know, that person going one-on-one and just hoping for the best.
And you just try to, and with the box and one, you can allow that guy to limit some of his touches on the perimeter. Cause I'm not really as worried about Steph catching a backdoor cut pass running towards Pascal, OG, Scotty, and Precious as I am with the havoc he wreaks just by in his actions with Draymond and passing and cutting and screening and picking rolls. Yeah. So I would rather take that. And if, you know, somebody else goes off, then we adjust as the game goes. But I think we start off by, he just feeds so much energy into that energy, into that, almost gasoline into that engine from his movement. And then you have to be shooting the ball.
And you mentioned Draymond Green. That's the other part of this. He is one of the best moving screeners the NBA's ever seen. just the way that even the Warriors in general, like, and who was it a few weeks ago that said that, you know, every screen that is set for Steph is a moving screen. It was some player. I can't remember who it was. He's like, so I don't know how he gets away with it, but it makes him impossible to guard.
It used to be worse too. That's what's crazy. It used to be worse. Like, it used, and there were bigger guys. Like, Andrew Bogut was out there and with Draymond, and David West was over there at one point. Like, I played with D West. I know all his screens and his screens because I was using them. So, like, I know the type of screens he's setting to get people open. I remember him just saying it to me. He's like, look, just come on my side. I'm going to get you open. He just say it to me. And it never failed. Yeah, I was open every single time. But I think the thing with Draymond, though, the worst thing that people do is they don't guard him. Mm-hmm. Like, they allow him to, like, you know, he's not looking to shoot the ball.
I can't believe people double actions on Steph. And then he just does that little slip pass. And now he's got, like, all kinds of room at the free throw line. He's going to do, like, maybe you want to challenge him to make a shot. Okay. But, like, do you also have, like, other, you have Jordan Poole, you have Klay Thompson, like, they're also moving. So something good is going to happen out of it. Yeah.
I can't let him just stand up there and see everything that's going on. Like, if Scotty's on him, I'm telling Scotty, when he catches the ball, pressure him. Make him make a decision. Make him have to turn his shoulder to you, turn his back to you. Make him have to make these plays under duress, right? Distress, right? You want to make him have to do something. Don't allow him to just sit there and let watch things develop. It's like you can't go a whole game without putting pressure on a quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, you can't. Like, a good one at that, especially one with the
– even if they've seen everything, you got to make them – feel you.
That's the one thing that I have to my advantage, right? Is I can make him feel me, and I can make him speed him up. Maybe not, I don't want to use the word speed him up, but just make him have to do things differently.
Yeah.
Especially with the weapons that this guy's got at wide receivers out there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't let him just sit there. I can't give Tom Brady an all-time wide receiving offense and just not blitz him ever.
Yeah.
Can't do that. Not saying that he's Tom Brady. I'm just saying that's my football.
I get what you're saying. Peak Tom Brady. This version might be retiring. Or I also Miami,
don't.
Whatever.
I don't also. I don't also need to give Draymond any more gasoline than he has. I don't want to call him Tom Brady, and somebody says,
"Yeah,
I'm the greatest."
I'm a bad man, and I'm pretty, Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's get to some questions here from fans. A couple came in here from Raptors. Dan, does CJ agree with a potential 4-point line as an NBA rule?
In all honesty, no.
No? Too gimmicky? No.
I think it'll start off horribly because guys are going to chase it, you know? Because we already – so think about what we went through when the league started changing to the three-point shot and everybody started shooting threes, right?
Yeah.
Like, we just got back to some of these guys that shouldn't be shooting them to stop shooting them. Like, at one point, everybody was just letting it go because the analytics say this or that. And everybody, so now we're getting back, and guys are getting back into the mid-range some, and it's flowing better. Still a high-paced game and a lot of threes, but they're better.
Yeah.
We went through a little muck-up stage, though, where everybody was like, just shoot it. Like, just do it. So when that four-point line comes, anybody that thinks they have range is going to shoot that shot. Uh-huh. And it's going to be balls in the third row. That's what I'm afraid of. I mean, I think that obviously I see the advantages of having a 4-point play, but like, do you really want to give a team a chance to? I mean, entertaining wise, you want to give a team a chance to have what, 12 point runs in three possessions, meaning we might score 200 points in the game. You play the right night, right way the right night.
I think it's going to happen already. Yeah, the Bucks put up 150 or 160 the other.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, you add that with guys that start to practice it and really train it, like, the next generation of guys will score 200 points in games.
Yeah.
Because there's already the point of guys are already shooting it from out there anyway, some of them. So, there's that side of it. But I'm just afraid that it would be more of those hunted if you put the line out there.
Let's get through some of these quickly. From Pascal Propaganda, which current NBA player do you think would score the most in a men's rec league game?
NBA player?
Yeah, current NBA player. You have to factor in that they're just cold hearted and they just want to put up like truly 200 points. While some guys might just take the foot off the gas, this person would just go balls to the wall nonstop. Yeah.
I mean, I honestly think there's more guys that would do that than you think.
Probably,
but also just because the pace that the NBA game is, like they wouldn't even have to go balls to the wall like that to do it because they already play a certain way. But if I got to pick a guy, I would pick Steph.
Okay.
I would pick a Steph. I would pick a Ja Morant. I would pick like these high energy, high paced guys that their pace is just so out of this world. Even for the NBA, there's nothing. They could be taking a night easy and still do that. You know what I mean? And we're talking about threes. But I know guys that have, you know, not to say not to put down the guys, but there's overseas guys that come home and can't be touched in these leagues either. Like, this is such a big gap. Like, I think that's kind of missed in this question. There's a big gap from even just from that men's league to a D1 college player. Yeah. Like, unless those guys are guys that are just got out of the league and they still got some, but other than that, good luck.
I know. How about we go to JD Quarante? I apologize if I mess that up. CJ's PJs, do you want those to come back? Would they come back? Do you want to open a clothing brand, a pajama brand?
That's funny though, but this is not a foreign thought. I will not lie about that. I don't know if it's going to be CJ's PJs. I definitely already used to do like some clothing brand stuff and I'm working on some stuff now, but I definitely want to be in that space. Like I was like the other day, I was talking with a friend. I remember who was, I was like, you can say whatever you want. You can say GoDaddy Curse. You can say all these things, but I'm a kid from Southeast Dallas that had his own pajama line with commercials and the whole, I don't know if that ever was ever like, that was never even a thought of mine. You know what I mean? I didn't even think about it until after it happened. I was like, yo, I had my own pajamas. And I think if I'd have thought about it that way during the time, I would have even been more – I didn't never believe in the GoDaddy curse, but I would have been more dismissive of the curse if I'd have thought about it. And that way I was like, yo, I got my own pajamas. I did a commercial shoot with, like, sheep. They were pooping on the floor and, like, I did all this stuff. It should have had way more fun with that than I did.
Was there someone, this is from T Raptor Ball, was there someone who helped you find your shooting form initially? Like, we're talking back in the day, is there someone that helped you figure out, you know, your ideal shooting form and hone in on that skill?
So I had my shooting form came naturally.
Yeah.
I had people come to help me get really technical about it though. So to make it more consistent and to make it more deadly as far as like the different ways I could shoot it and to extend my range. And you know, even early in my career, I still had it was like almost Michael Reddish sometimes. Like I almost had like a little bit of a slingshot to it, but I just met some really good coaches and we broke down film, footwork, follow through, guide hand, Even up until the time that I was with Phil Handy in Toronto that first year, we were still doing things that I was figuring out. That was, yeah, it's a never ending thing, you know? Like, I think there's always space to, I don't shoot 100%, so there's always space for me to get better, right? And I think there was always little things that I was always picking up that in the grand scheme of things would add up to just being able to pass it back. That was the biggest thing. Also, I'm a searcher like that because I want to be able to teach it. So that's right. The reason I want to master it as much as I can.
Final question. There are a few that I didn't get to because they were trade deadline related. We're going to do that probably next episode. We're going to focus on where the Raptors are now. Can they improve? Can they keep on riding this this momentum off yesterday? So this is the final question, but we'll get to those probably next week. Did you ever get teammates or opponents to autograph shoes?
I got teammates' shoes. I never got any opponent's shoes. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just never really was my thing. But over time, I got teammate stuff. I got and I got some jerseys from guys I play with, you know. I still got stuff from my Utah Jazz days. We found a basketball the other day, actually, in a box from, like, one of the with Booze and D-Will, AK, Jerry Sloan, everybody's names on it. It was pretty cool to see that. But, yeah, I think you should cherish this time. And this is a place that a lot of people want to get to that don't get to it. And I look back at it, that's another thing. I don't regret it, but, like, if I'd have been more present about that, I would have got more things to, you know, really document time and space. But I think it's a good thing to do that. I don't know if I would do it as much as guys do it on the camera. Like, I don't think it needs to be broadcast every time you do it, but that's not.
Now that it's public, we can wish you a congratulations for you and Lauren. You have baby boy on the way.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. That's awesome. The final Miles Child, the final one, just in case anybody was wondering, don't ask me. It wasn't my decision. You know, maybe it was a joint discussion, but she was ready to, you know, cut it. But we're happy. You know, it's a boy.
Yeah.
The girls are happy. Now they didn't like it at first. Now they're happy. They see the belly. So they're getting into it. But it's an exciting time, man. Thank you so
much.
That's
awesome. That's awesome, man. As a person who has an 18-month-year-old boy, get your cardio in now, because when he's ready, he's going to have you moving.
Yeah, I've heard,
your step counter is going to be profitable.
I've seen that energy is different. Even though my girls are high level, but I don't even want to know. I mean, I do want to know, obviously, but it's going to be fun. The house is going to be very festive. Let's say that.
Absolutely. And hopefully the Raptors, they have themselves a festive road trip. We're going to talk to CJ again very soon. Hopefully we're talking about a few more wins and the Raptors can get on a bit of a roll here. CJ, thank you so much, man.
My man, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.